better you get.
Have another beer.
No, I want to go home to my own room to sleep in my own bed. I don't want another beer.
Would you like another beer?
Oh, yeah.
I've made my choice, and I choose me.
Lover.
Is there anything in the store? Well, he was in the store.
Pay careful attention and don't look annoyed.
You are now listening to the Pop-Up Podcast. It's quite literally a podcast for whatever pops up. Here's the host of the show, director, producer, writer, and however else you know him, Pete Ferrero.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Pop-Up Podcast. It is awesome to be back. What a bunch of great episodes that we have. And now the next few coming in the next few weeks are just absolutely incredible. It is really diving deep into nostalgia for me and the shows and movies that I grew up on watching, and getting to talk to some of the people behind those things is just going to be absolutely awesome. Today starts this chain of some really, really cool episodes coming over the next month or so, and it is with Scott Schwartz, who played Eric Bates in The Toy. He was also in A Christmas Story, and she's the kid that gets his tongue stuck on the pole. But this week, because I grew up loving Jackie Gleason and Richard Pryor, I thought we would just dive deep into The Toy. So for the most part, we talked about everything from the audition process, the other kids, to what it's like working with Jackie Gleason in your first major film project, to just a boatload of really good nuggets that I think everybody is going to genuinely enjoy. So I had such a great time with him, and I think that that comes through in this interview. He did talk to me about Christmas Story a little bit too, but we're going to save that for a bonus episode down the line. So it is the start of a new week, so I always like to kick it off with a cold one. And so this week I am drinking a Ghost Hawk Lager from the Ghost Hawk Brewing Company. Just recently found out about them through my good friend Leah Gashion, who owns South and Pine in Morristown. And she's been saying, I've got to try this beer, I've got to try this beer. And so, cracked one open. And that is what I am about to dive into. And so, I'm going to dive into the Ghost Hawk Lager, and you are going to take a listen to this. Then we'll be right back with Scott Schwartz. Hey everybody, I want to tell you about this really exciting brewery that's opened up a couple years ago. Again, I said that I had found out about them from my good friend Leah Gashion, and I'm super excited to promote the Ghost Hawk Brewing Company, which is in Clifton, New Jersey. They have so many cool things opened by a couple of regular guys. The beers are absolutely delicious, and if you are on the East Coast, you definitely have to go down there and check them out and try all their cool samplings. And make sure you tell them that you heard about them from us here at the Pop-Up Podcast. To find out more about them, you can check out ghosthawkbrewing.com for all the beers and all the cool events and things that they've got going on. Again, that is ghosthawkbrewing.com for more information. All right, man, I'm so excited to have on my podcast today Scott Schwartz, who was in The Toy, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it's, you know, I think there's a handful of movies that when I grew up a kid in the 80s, obviously, and I think there's a handful of movies that just stick out iconically, and I think yours is one of the, you're in a couple of them, actually.
Yeah, yeah, of course, you know, but... You know, The Toy being that with the time that it was, you know, with Jackie Gleason and Richard Pryor, you know, and it different time than it is now. You know, now today it's like everything's crazy and wacky, you know, whatever. And it's, you know, I tell people, you know, hey, listen, you know, anybody else bought a black man beside me?
Right.
You know,
other than
and
maybe
I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah, yeah.
Other than the $1 million man.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
We're from wrestling world. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Get Virgil. He'll move the luggage. Don't worry. It's all right.
But yeah, I mean, so we're going to dive into the talking about that movie, The Toy, and everything that you kind of experienced. Now, when you were living in Jersey, I feel like the Honeymooners was a thing for all of us that lived in Jersey, right? Like,
well, sure, because it was on WPIX 11,
right?
Know, 11 o'clock at night, 5 days a week.
So is it a part of your culture, Jackie Gleason? And
oh, yeah. I mean, it was a part before. Right. You know, I did the I worked with him, you know. I mean, between Smokey and the Bandit, the Hustler, you know, and the Honeymooners.
So,
I
mean, like, as a kid, you're definitely aware of who this person is.
Absolutely.
It's impossible not to know who Jackie Gleason is.
I was a fan.
Yeah. And what about Richard Pryor?
Oh, I knew Stir Crazy, you know, Silver Streak,
right.
Bingo Long.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I knew some of the stand-up, you know, the Live in Concert. You know, Sunset Strip hadn't come out yet. What, you know, they had just done it. But I don't know. I knew who Richard was, of course.
Sure. And then when you, how is it that you even, because I don't think you're an actor prior to this.
No, I was an actor prior to this. See, you sent me that question, and I'm like, is this guy serious, man? But, really?
Okay, so you were doing commercials?
I did over 100 commercials. I did 100 voiceovers. I did off-Broadway. I did Broadway.
I read maybe on Wikipedia, which is never accurate, that they
more
did,
or
like,
less, I think it is.
They did, like, a star search for...
Well, that was part of the casting for The Toy, was they did a search for a Jackie Gleason lookalike at all the Toys R Us stores.
Oh, that's so crazy.
But really, it was just for promotional purposes. They never really figured they'd find a kid who would look like him and could act.
Right, exactly.
You know, I went the more conventional way. I went through, you know, my agent auditions and 9 auditions
okay,
later,
so
you get the movie.
You're not in the search, search.
No, no, no.
Okay, that's, I think, where the confusion was. I was like,
yeah,
oh.
No.
So you had been doing commercials and you're acting in projects and whatnot. And then
Broadway, off Broadway, yeah, sure.
So you have an agent at the time? Is that
of course.
And the agent is what tells you, who tells you, like, there's this awesome movie called The Toy.
No, it was just another audition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I had been on other movie auditions before that.
Right.
You know, I hadn't gotten one, but it was just another, you know, oh, you're going in for, you know, audition. Okay, you know. So they call and you go there, and it was a cattle call. There was what we call a cattle call. It's 400 kids there.
Right.
And it was basically just they sit you down. They go, what's your name? How old are you?
Right.
Who's your agent? Okay, thanks for coming in. That was pretty much the whole process because there were so many kids.
Sure.
That, you know, that was it. But it dwindles down. The second call back, there's 150 kids. And the third one, there's 50. And then as you go, the numbers dwindle. And by the time we got down to probably the fourth or fifth one, then they actually put me on tape.
Interesting.
You know? And it was, you know, they say, okay, Slate. And that meant, you know, hi, I'm Scott Schwartz. I'm this old. This is my agent, you know, from Bridgewater, New Jersey. Okay, great. And then, like, by the sixth audition, it was start reading dialogue.
Sure.
And the eighth one was what they called a screen test, but it was here, and it was just in the casting director's office, and you just kind of read the scenes with her. Okay, fine. And then ended up flying out to Los Angeles and doing the actual screen test at Warner, you know, at the Warner Brothers Studios.
That must have been so cool, right? As a young kid, I'm sure you've been on lots before, but this now wants to become.
No, this was a first. You know, you know, again, back then it was they treated the actors differently than they do now because of either be it their budgets, finance, whatever. But it was first class United with the 747, and we're upstairs on the, you know, the second on the top deck,
right? Which doesn't even not even a top,
doesn't even nothing anymore,
right.
You know. And I mean, it was filet mignon on the plane, and you know, dessert was ice cream. Well, you just think ice cream, they bring you over. No. What they had is they had a bowl that was probably 16 inches wide of ice cream scoops of Haagen-Dazs. So would you like vanilla? Would you like chocolate? Would you like strawberry? And, oh, we have hot fudge and we have sprinkles. I mean, this was like, okay, great.
That's crazy, man.
And, you know, you land in Los Angeles. Okay, fine. And there's the little guy with the sign that says Schwartz, you know. And you're like, oh, this is cool, you know.
Does your mom go? There's
my dad.
Dad, okay.
And you get in the limo. You know, nice limousine service from LAX to the Sheraton Universal.
So you must know at this point, like, they're serious about me being this kid.
Well, I just knew that I'm getting to the screen test, to that part of it. I didn't know how many kids were left.
Sure.
You know, but you know there's only a few.
You have to be at that point.
For everybody.
Right, exactly.
They're not doing this for everybody.
Yeah.
So then you go and you do the screen test, and there actually was three kids. There was the winner from the search. From Toys R Us.
Okay, interesting.
Who was kind of a heavy set kid, you know.
Looked like Jackie Gleason.
Sort of, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but couldn't act his way out of a paper bag.
Right,
forget it.
Right.
The second kid was Henry Thomas.
Okay,
who
wow.
had done E.T.
Yeah.
You know. And then me. But it was like, it was three completely different everythings.
Sure, yeah.
The Toys R Us kid looked like Gleason, couldn't act. Henry one of the best actors of our generation, wasn't a comedy guy.
Right.
He was, we used to call him the Al Pacino of the kids.
Okay.
Back then.
Okay.
Because he was very indrawn and he was a very serious, you know, actor, you know. And you watch E.T. and I mean, it's crying.
It would
crying,
never
crying.
Have been right for it, the toy.
Right. And then there's me, and I was a loose wheel. I was
a loose cannon.
I was a loose cannon, a loose wheel, and I mean, I just let it fly. You know?
Right, which is what they must have loved about you, too, you know?
Well, things happen in life for a reason. Okay. So I'm all excited. I'm going to do the screen test with Richard Pryor. I mean, this is awesome. This is cool, man. Okay, fine.
Because no matter what happens, you did this.
Of course. Right. So I got this far, and I got to meet Richard Pryor. I'm all excited. Okay. So I'm in the trailer. And a little, you know, where they kind of had us doing, you know, you dress and whatever. Wardrobe, okay. And the lady from the casting, she goes, she comes over and she says, listen, unfortunately, Mr. Pryor's not going to make it. He's stuck in Atlanta, divorce number 5.
Right.
So we have another, you know, black actor for you to work with. Yeah, okay. All right, whatever. So she closes the door and I'm in there with my father. And I immediately started with, you know, some obscenities, whatever. Because I was pissed because I, you know,
right.
Richard Pryor. Okay. So a couple minutes goes by. Guy knocks at the door. You know, hi, I'm Norman. I'm going to be reading with you. Oh, okay. You know, he says, hey, let's walk around, you know, so we can kind of get a rapport going. Okay, cool. You know, whatever. All right.
It's still not Richard Pryor.
It's not Richard Pryor.
Right.
Well, so we start walking. We're maybe 5 minutes into the walk. Maybe. And I'm like, you know, I got to tell you, you look familiar. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, I did this TV thing. Nope, that's not it. Oh, I did this other. Nope, that's not. Oh, I did. Nope, that's not it. He says, well, I did a comedy. I don't know if you saw it. And I did a movie. And I said, okay, Airplane.
Oh, okay. Wow.
He's the thin of the two jive guys.
Oh, wow.
Well, that was it. It was all over, man, because I was an airplane junkie.
Right. Yeah.
So I was like, Richard Pryor, who's that?
Right.
This is the guy from Airplane.
This is even better yet. Yeah.
So immediately, you know, he said that. I'm like, yeah, shit, man. But lean me to the bones, checking me up, oh, tighten me. And he's going, huh? You notice stuff?
Yeah.
And I just hang loose, blood. You gonna catch up on a rebound on the middle side. And so I do. I go into this whole thing with him, and I did. I knew all of it.
Right.
Quick side story. You used to go to school, Sony Walkman, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay,
yeah.
My Sony Walkman on my cassette. I didn't listen to music. I had 5 movies: Blazing Saddles, History of the World Part 1, Young Frankenstein, Airplane. And Smoking the Bandit. Those were my 5.
So
and that's in middle school.
Yeah.
That's before I
any
did this.
Of this. Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
So I know Airplane as well as the back of my hand. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just start. I let it go.
Right.
So we wrap it up, whatever. You know, we finish BSing. We go over to the soundstage. And he had told Richard Donner, the director, and Ray Stark, the producer. He says, I don't know where you got this kid, but you got to let him go. You got to let him loose. Just watch. You got to see this.
Right, because they have no idea about
no
this.
No idea.
Everything's reading from the page at that point, and, right?
But it's happening right then. It wasn't something that was planned.
Right.
So, I mean, I knew the scene that we were doing, and they had kind of created a staircase for us to come down in the soundstage. So we do it a couple times, you know. Okay, you know, we'll do it again. All right, fine. So we're doing the dialogue, whatever. Yeah. And then Richard Donner goes, forget that. Do it in jive.
Wow.
It's like, okay. So I just start making up words with Norman. And he's playing off me. We're going back and forth. Yeah, I'm 13 years old. This is my first screen test.
Sure.
And I'm just letting it fly. This is great. We did this a couple times. They loved it. Okay, fine. Then it was tell some jokes. What jokes do you know at 13? Everything is... No, everything's a dirty joke. You don't. There's no clean jokes back then.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know Henny Youngman. No, you know. So it was, you know, the one that I always say, because it's the fastest, easiest, whatever, you know, it's what's the difference between a rooster and a hooker? A rooster says cock-a-doodle-doo, a hooker says any cock-a-doodle-doo. That's the first joke out of my mouth.
Right.
And, I mean, there's 80 adults at the bottom of the staircase. My agent's there, my dad's there, whatever. And my agent's like, he's telling my dad, I'm going to kill him.
Right.
I'm going to kill him. What is he doing? What is he doing? Not realizing that Donner, Ray Stark, they were looking for a kid that they thought could even have a chance to stand with Richard and hang with him. And if he goes, you can go with him. They didn't know any of that. You know, that's what they were looking for.
But you didn't know that either.
I didn't know that either.
You were just...
I was having fun.
Right, exactly.
I was just winging it, having fun.
Yeah.
And they're encouraging me.
Right.
So they're not saying, you know, you're 13, you can't be doing that kind of stuff. No, it was, give us more. Just go ahead. Just let it go. Okay, fine, whatever. So we get done, and, you know, over the course, you know, the next 4 weeks, of course, you know, I end up getting the movie.
Which is awesome. Who tells you that, too? Is it your agent says, hey, they...
No, actually, I had gotten to the point, it was just before or during Christmas break from school.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sick as a dog. I had gotten myself sick. I wanted this thing so bad.
Sure, who wouldn't, right?
You know,
this is
and
crazy.
And I wasn't eating right, and I just, mm-hmm. Your head goes someplace else.
Right, and the longer of the delay in responding to you or whatever, it's like, oh, shit, they must have, knows what happened.
But everybody kind of takes off between Christmas and New Year's,
of course,
you know?
Yeah.
And we hadn't gone back to, you know, school yet. I think it was like the 2nd of January, and we were going back like the next day or two, whatever it was. And so I'm laying in my parents' bed. Mom and Dad are out to work. It was about 11:30 in the morning, you know, here in Jersey. And Richard Donner calls me up. Scotty, it's Richard Donner. Sure. I thought it was one of my friends playing a joke on me because I told him, you know, whatever. But on the set, you know, his nickname is Dick Donner. You know, so you call him Dick. Okay. I didn't tell anybody that. So I said, yeah, okay, it's Richard Donner. Yeah, okay, you know. What are we calling you on the set? He goes, Dick Donner? Then I realized it's him, right? I said, hang on 1 second. So I'm running like 101 and a half fever at this point.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm in my underwear.
Right.
Laying in my parents' bed. We had had a big snowfall. So there's probably a foot and a half, 2 feet of snow on the ground outside. I'm not kidding. I got no shoes on, no clothes. I got underwear on. I went out front of my house, opened up the door, walked outside, put my head in the snow. Came back inside. I picked up the phone. Dick, you still there? Yeah. Everything okay? Oh, no, everything's fine, you know.
Right.
Well, you know, what's happening? Just wanted to call you, congratulate you, you got the
movie. Oh, that's awesome, man. Yeah.
Thanks. You know, he goes, you do what you did in the audition, you're going to be great. This is going to be fun. Absolutely. Okay. We talked for a couple minutes. Okay, fine. I hang up the phone. Trying to call my dad. His phone's busy. The casting director had called
him. This is before
my mother's,
call waiting. And
there's
all
no
that.
Call waiting.
Right, yeah.
There's no cell phones. Mom's out to lunch from work. Can't call her, whatever, you know. And then everybody got back, you know, in touch, and
sure.
Everything was great. So, and it was, you know, a month later that I went out to California and did the wardrobe fitting and all that kind of stuff that they do.
So you're staying in California at that point to do
No, I was in Jersey.
Uh-huh. But when the movie's going to be shot, they're going to do that, and they're going
to
do that.
No, we went out to L.A. For the wardrobe fitting.
Mm-hmm.
I came back home. We didn't start shooting for 2 more weeks.
Right.
Because they had to make my military uniform.
Spider-Man.
The Spider-Man pajamas,
right.
And the motorcycle outfit.
Right.
You know, they actually had the people making the outfits for me. Most of the other stuff, like all the t-shirts and stuff, that was stuff off the rack, and they just put a little emblem on them. Okay, fine.
Sure.
You know, go back home and then head down to East Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Oh, interesting.
To shoot the toy.
Yeah. So it wasn't actually shot in LA, it was shot in location in Louisiana.
I shot a film years later, but the three movies that people have seen the most between The Toy, Kidco, and A Christmas Story, The Toy shot in Baton Rouge, Kidco was shot in Tucson, Arizona, and Christmas Story is shot in Cleveland and Canada.
Right.
So back then, I actually had never shot a film.
In L.A.
In L.A. Right. In the studios.
Right.
I've never shot a film on the lot.
Right. But so, you know? what is the soundstage that they create like for this, for the mansion and all this stuff?
They bought a barn.
Okay.
They bought an extremely large barn.
Uh-huh.
They soundproofed it. And that became our soundstage.
Wow.
You know.
So the mansion is inside this
the
barn.
The interiors were in the barn. Now, the outside of the house, that's a physical house.
Right.
You know, it was a plantation house in East Baton Rouge.
Sure.
You know, I mean, it was a monster. You know, they had 35 acres or 40 acres, whatever. It was big.
Yeah.
And the pond and all that. It's real. I mean, that's the back of the house, you know. And the front of the house and the whole thing.
Right.
But the interiors were in this barn that they just, you know, transformed into a soundstage. And
that's
they bought
incredible.
It.
Incredible, yeah.
They built, and then they ended up selling it to the NBC affiliate in Baton Rouge.
Oh,
and
that's perfect. That worked out. Yeah, yeah.
It's now their
soundstage down there.
They're they do the news from that building.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, all because of this movie.
Yeah.
And so what is it like then when you first meet, let's say, Gleason? What is that like to you? Because now he's icon.
Well, so I met Pryor first.
Okay, so tell me about that.
So I met him when we were doing the wardrobe fitting. He came. And Richard Donner had a pinball machine in his office. And I'm a pinball junkie, so I'm playing pinball, whatever. And Richard Pryor comes in, and Dick says, "Hey, Scotty, you gotta quit for a minute. There's somebody who wants to say hi." And I turned to my right, and there's Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
And he said, "Hi, you know, yeah. Nice to meet you." I said, "Mr. Pryor, it's a pleasure." He goes, "Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no.
Right.
Rich, Rick, Dick, I don't care what you don't know. Do not call me Mr. Pryor. That was my father."
Right.
Okay.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm Scotty. Okay.
Yeah.
And he was cool and nice and fun. And, you know, right away, we found the impossible common ground between a lower middle class Jewish kid from New Jersey and a black guy that grows up in a whorehouse in Peoria, Illinois.
Right. Yeah.
But somehow, yeah, there was this middle ground of love of comedy, fun, entertainment, this and that, whatever. And, you know, my folks were never worried about language.
Right.
You know, so saying obscenities.
Well, it's whatever.
You just
yeah.
let it fly. My father didn't care, you know.
Right.
Mother didn't care, whatever. So it was like, you know, when you start hanging with Richard, you know, at
he's going to talk that way.
And he's going to talk that way. And you just respond. And that's just what this was. So he knew I was, you know, at the first meeting was pretty cool kid. Okay, fine. I actually don't meet Gleason until we're already in Louisiana. And
now, is your dad a fan too?
Of course, you guys, this is we were the movie junkies,
right?
Yeah,
so you
junkies,
guys have got to be like,
of course,
when is he going to show up? What's it going to be like? Because well, there's no way to know. It's not the Honeymooners. This is Gleason older, right? Yeah.
Well, I mean, listen, if you know things about Hollywood and you know things about people and whatever, you hear the stories about certain things, and Gleason hated working with kids and animals.
Right. Great.
That's, yeah. They tell me this to start off, you know, and I kind of knew it from other people. And whatever. Okay. So.
And
you
he's know, your dad. He's going to be your dad.
He's going to be my dad.
Yeah.
I'm not the typical kid, though, because it's like I saw him, you know, we go down to Louisiana, and he stayed anywhere in the world he went. He stayed at the Hilton Hotels. He stayed in the presidential suite. He was friends with the family.
Right.
Anywhere he went, that's the room he had. That's okay. Where he stays. So there's a, you know, 16-seat table in his presidential suite and whatever. So we're all sitting there. So it's, you know, the producers, director, you know, other cast members, Richard Pryor, Gleason, my dad, me, whatever. And Richard Donner knew I was a Smokey and the Bandit junkie. So it wasn't even hello.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't even I'm so-and-so. Nope. We sat down. Richard Donner looks at me, goes, "Scotty, go over to Mr. Gleason. Do that that smoky thing that you do." Okay. Director says, "Go do it." I go do it. Okay,
you have to. Yeah.
So I walk over, and Gleason is sitting in a chair, and I'm standing up, and I'm still shorter than he is, you know, whatever. So I'm 13 years old, and I walked over. The first thing I ever said to the man, I just looked at him, and I said, "There's no way, no way that you could come from my loins." As soon as we get home, first thing I'm going to do is punch your mama in the mouth. Well, he starts laughing. He says, you know more of it? Yeah. Keep going. It was testing me.
It was trying
to see if I just memorized one line.
Right. Right.
Well, now I start doing the whole shtick. I'm doing like 6-7 minutes of him doing, you know.
Lines from this
everything.
Movie. Yeah.
He got a kick out of it.
That's awesome.
That here I am. I'm four and a half feet tall. Right. I weigh 50 pounds. And I can do him as good as he does him.
Right, yeah.
Because on every inflection, I mean, the noises, the you know, all of it. And I had it all down.
Right.
He just got a kick out of it. So I got on the good side right away.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like I was trying.
No.
The director said, do it. I went and I did it. And it turns out positive.
Yeah, because, I mean, he had to know, like, well, there's all those stories about Gleason, like you said. So this is going to sort of, like,
he
knows that you're going to, Gleason should love this. You know what I mean? Especially
again,
because they know that you know it, you know?
Right. But again, at 13, you don't think that way.
Right.
You know? And, I mean, you come to learn that, you know, doing, you know, impressions is the highest form of flattery
totally.
To somebody. Doing
right.
them, you know? And again, it wasn't something that was set up. It just kind of happened. Okay. We laughed. We joked. We did Honeymooners bits. I mean,
oh,
he
really?
Was, oh,
yeah.
He taught me how to shoot pool.
That's cool.
I mean,
did he talk about the Honeymooners?
Sure. Yeah. I asked him everything. Oh, listen. So once we get on the set and we start talking, we had time. Okay, fine. You know, whatever. And there's always a lot of downtime on sets. And because I had a background, I loved old entertainment, old films, this and that.
Right.
So, I mean, I knew he was in, you know, vaudeville and, you know, all the things that he had done. And I'm asking him about people, you know, Jermaine Humphrey Bogart, yeah, you know, this and that, you know, Cagney, okay, fine. Then I hit George M. Cohan.
Right, right. He must have been like, wow.
And he's just like, sure, you know. you know, at one point his assistant, you know, went to my dad and said, you know, he doesn't talk to, there's not been a kid that, and he was with him for 35 years. He didn't talk to nobody.
Wow.
Doesn't talk to a kid. Forget it. Ain't going to happen. He goes, he loves your kid. Your kid just got it.
Yeah.
And it's all good.
Right. That is so cool. Yeah.
So we,
that must have been an absolutely fascinating time.
But then the quick side story.
Yeah.
It's 2 years later. I shoot a Nerf pool game commercial.
Okay.
The old Nerf footballs and stuff.
Definitely.
Well, they created a pool game.
Interesting.
That you put on the corner of a table, like a dining room table.
Okay.
And you shoot pool.
Yeah, interesting.
Okay. It's a grandfather, a grandmother, and the grandson. So it's me. Minnesota Fats is playing the grandfather, and Joyce Randolph, Trixie from The Honeymooners, is playing the grandmother.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they realized it, if they had set this up this way.
Right, or
it's
just by chance.
But here we are,
yeah.
That we have direct links to Gleason, all three of
Again.
Us.
Again, right.
Minnesota Fats, Gleason is in The Hustler.
Yeah.
You know, The Honeymooners with,
obviously.
With Joyce. So we're at lunch, and my dad was talking to the director of the commercial, whatever. This is hysterical because this is whatever. Somebody told Joyce. So Joyce comes over to my dad and said, so when did you work with a couple years ago? Was he the same son of a bitch he was 30 years ago?
Wow.
35 years. First thing, that's what she said to my dad.
Yeah, wow.
So that was the reputation. And yet, you know, he was good to me. I saw him a year before he passed. I went and visited him.
That's
and
cool.
And he could not have been any more wonderful and fun. And
so all the stories that you sort of heard about are probably not, you never experienced any of that.
No. Now, through a friend of mine, I got a chance to ask Tom Hanks the question.
Okay.
Because Tom Hanks is in Gleason's last film, Nothing in Common.
That's right. A great movie, by the
you
way.
Know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine, you know, works with Hanks and with Tom Hanks. And I said, can you ask him this? He says, yeah. He's just a grumpy old man. That was the answer. Grumpy old man.
But you didn't have that experience.
I didn't have that.
That's interesting. That's a testament to you, I think, you know, and the relationship you formed early on with him.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that your movie was about something sweet that Gleason was playing. He was playing a dad that didn't know maybe how to love his son or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So he's trying to almost experience who he is as a person through this movie in a weird way, right?
In its own weird, biggest way.
Yeah.
But, you know, we... the whole thing is you're not supposed to bond with the kid till the end. And yet, from the beginning, he and I just bonded and clicked. Yeah.
And which, with Richard, too, like, I mean, there's so much stuff of you two guys playing like kids and stuff like that.
Oh, listen, you know.
Yeah.
At the time, they were pushing Mattel and television,
okay.
Which was like Coleco, ColecoVision.
I remember that,
We had Atari 2600. So the second one after Atari was Mattel and television. This was the big video game push. And in the toy room, or not in the toy room, in the toy store, just as I come up to him... And he's at the Wonder Wheel or whatever. Behind there, there's a big cardboard thing in television and whatever. So they sent us all in televisions. So we had them
cool.
in our room.
Yeah.
Now, Richard knew that I watched The Honeymooners from 11 to 11:30 every night.
Still while you're on doing
this. I was on the set, sure.
Yeah.
So I'm in my room, you know, whatever. 11:31, the phone would ring in the room, you know. Scotty, it's Richard. Come and see me. I got to talk to you for a minute. All
right. Right.
So I go on it. It was a motel. It wasn't a hotel. We were in a motel.
Right, because there's probably no big hotels in this.
No, there were. They were just too cheap, and they didn't want to, you know, put us in the Hilton.
Right.
So they put us in this motel, which was owned by the same guy that owned the plantation house.
Okay.
Guy's name was A.C. Lewis. Extremely wealthy guy. Okay. So I would go over, literally 3-4 nights a week at 11:30. And I'd go, and, you know, Richard, what's going on? I just got a new game, Pizza Time. Come on, we got to play. We got to play Pizza Time. And then it was, you know, I got Frogger.
Right.
I got Missile Command. I got...
So
we're playing video games from 11:45 until 3 o'clock in the morning. Then I'm going back to the room. I'm going to sleep. I'm getting up at 5:45 or 6.
Right.
For them to pick me up at 6 or 6:15 in the morning, go to the set.
Right.
I'm getting 3 hours of sleep.
This
but don't matter.
This is going to be, for a kid, the greatest experience. Do you get to play video games with Richard Pryor and just hang out and be his friend?
We went to the movies. We went to see Poltergeist.
Wow. Yeah. So if someone says, well, who did you see Poltergeist?
Okay. Oh, opening weekend. We went to see Poltergeist. Okay, you know.
Right.
And I mean, of course, the movie theater's going nuts. Richard Pryor's here and all that stuff. And people are coming. I was like, no. after the movie. Let's all sit down. Let's all enjoy.
Right.
Don't worry. You know, after the movie, you want to autograph or you want to, you know, if anybody got a camera. Back then, there's no cell phone camera.
No, it's not like
so. There's
today.
Only a couple of cameras. You know, that people got a picture with them, but everything else was they just grabbed a napkin and got an autograph or whatever. But we stayed there for almost 2 hours after the movie ended.
Right.
You know.
So did you watch Richard do all the Wonder Wheel stuff? Like when the first...
A little bit.
Yeah, because I mean, you're, like, you would be in and you would be out.
We were
you know?
In... oh, God, it starts with a D. It was a department store.
It's probably closed.
Yeah, no, they're gone now.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name of it. But it was a two-story...
department store.
Department store. And everything, we were all on the bottom floor, you know, the garage, you know, the parking lot and everything else, so... I mean, I was doing schooling and, you know, you're in the motorhome hanging out, whatever. And they were all upstairs shooting. And it's like, what are you going to do? You're going to sit there, you know, eat the food, you know, catering's all downstairs. Everything's downstairs other than they're shooting upstairs. That was it.
Yeah. So if you're not on set, you're not.
Dillard's.
That's it. Yeah. That's awesome.
Dillard's. Thank you. Yeah. It just came into my head.
Yeah. So you're getting to see that. But what is the toy room like your bed? The
bedroom.
Your character's toy room. Like, what is that like? Is that.
Soundstage.
And is it really all those function? Are they functional games in your room? And are you playing with them or?
Well, most of the I play video games. I play pinball. So they had the haunted house pinball machine, which they ended up putting one in my hotel room.
Right.
You know. Oh, you like pinball? You want one of those? Sure. Okay. And they put it in my hotel room. I didn't get to keep it. I didn't get to take it home.
No. Right.
They just put it in there while I'm shooting the movie.
Yeah.
Everything was workable. I was a basketball junkie, so they had this mock, just a little hoop thing with a Nerf ball.
Right.
And, I mean, I would play that several hours a day. I would, you know, whatever.
Right.
But you had asked about the
robot.
The robot. That's not real, man.
I know. Yeah.
Bobby Porter, who was a stuntman, he goes all the way back to Planet of the Apes and other things. You know, whatever.
Right.
He's my stunt double for the motorcycle and all that kind of stuff. He's actually in that thing.
Oh, wow.
You know, with the Rock'em Sock'em. So his arms are in there, and he's doing it. So it wasn't that the robot wasn't real.
It's not
real.
A real
Sorry.
Robot. Yeah. You know. Darn. Yeah. I thought that was like the... Well, when you're a kid and being a kid and seeing that toy, you're like, where? How do you get one of the robots that fights?
I didn't have that benefit because I saw him getting in and out of it all the time. I was like, okay.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And so you and Richard developed this friendship, and then that's great because later on in the movie, there's a lot of those like sympathetic moments with you and Richard. So what was it working? Because, you know, he's the comedy stuff, you know, is going to be fun, right? But some of the dramatic things, how is that working with Richard on that?
It was easy because I had spent so much time with him already by the time we got to those scenes and seeing him off camera.
Right.
He wasn't what you would think. He wasn't wild and crazy and nuts. No, he would go and sit in his chair and he'd read books, underline things, highlight things. Very studious,
right?
You know, so it was, you know, easy to see him, you know, kind of be in a different mood, so to speak,
right?
You know,
and you got to do some of that with Gleason too,
sure.
Which
well, I mean, that's the. The going back to the to the airport to go back to military school. The first time we shot it was my first day of work. They wanted to just knock it out.
Get it done with.
Just get that done with so I don't have to be so serious the rest of the time and everything's fine. Unfortunately, nobody told me what ad-libbing was.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, which is basically you just, you know, you
improving
have a script,
it.
You improv, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know this. Broadway, off-Broadway commercials, it's all dialogue-driven. You say what's on the paper.
Sure.
Okay. So the first day of shooting, I flopped. I completely flopped, cost Columbia, whatever it was, $100,000, $120,000 for the day, and almost got fired.
Because?
Nobody told me.
To just go with what you feel and say the lines.
Nobody told me.
Right. So you were just reading the line as it was.
Sure, I'm doing my lines.
But you're also, by the way, a kid, so there's no way to know Gleason likes to do this, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Nobody told me that he's going to do this. So I'm waiting for my cues.
Mm.
You know, I'm waiting for my cues and to give my line, and they're not coming, and so I'm fumbling.
Right.
You know, which anybody would do if, you know, you don't know what the program is. You don't
exactly.
know how to do this.
So who tells you, like...
Well...
Yeah.
So, there was another producer on the film, Phil Feldman, and he takes me back to the hotel and sits me in his office and calls my father. He's like, Danny, gotta tell you, it was a disaster. Your kid doesn't know his lines. You know, you're going to give him one more shot. If not, you know, we're going to let him go, send him home. My father's like, wait a minute. He knows everybody's lines. What are you talking about? And it wasn't like I'm going to freeze. I've been on stage. I've been in front of
camera,
whatever.
Yeah, you know the
lines. Okay. Yeah. So Dad gets me on the phone. What happened? I said, Dad, he's not saying what he's supposed to say. All right. Don't worry about what he's saying. When he stops talking, just say your line. I don't care what he says. When he shuts up, say your line. Okay, fine. So I go back to my room, and word gets to Richard Pryor what happened. He immediately calls me up, come to my room. And, I mean, I'm devastated. I'm crying. I was upset. Whatever. And you're sitting in front of her producer going, hey, if your kid screws the pooch tomorrow, he's fired. He's gone. Forget
it. Which is crazy and so ridiculous.
But that's what it is.
That's Hollywood. But
he's not treating me like a 13-year-old.
Right.
You're on an adult set on a $12
million
film.
No other kids. You're the only kid in the movie, which
is crazy. But they'll find somebody else.
Totally.
The kid that was my stand-in, he couldn't have done it. You
right.
Know,
no,
love him to
definitely.
Death, he couldn't have done it. But you're on a movie set. You're expected to act as an adult and be a professional. Okay, and I screwed the pooch. I flopped. But
right.
In reality, it wasn't my fault. All they had to do is tell me that, and I would have been fine. So word gets to Richard. He calls me up. Come to my room. So we're going. What happened? So I tell him this, that. We talked for about 20 minutes. And he goes, okay, stop. He goes, what did we just do? We had a conversation. Right. That's exactly what dialogue is. You just go back and forth. I don't care what it says on the piece of paper. Just come close. You and I will make up the rest, and we'll be fine. And okay. All right. So the next day I had off, but Richard says, come to the set. You know, they were doing the banking scene with him and Ned Beatty.
Okay, I love that scene.
They did the outside stuff, and then they went inside and did the bank. So I'm there. And Richard said, bring my script. Okay, fine. So I'm sitting there. So I've got my script, and I'm watching him, and I'm looking at the dialogue. So I'm sort of
getting educated
quickly.
Yeah.
Get to the end of the day. I went back to the hotel to the motel with Richard, and we're talking in the car. And he goes, you see what I did? I said, yeah. You going to be okay now? Hope so. He goes, you'll be fine. Great. So the next 3 days, bang, 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 I'm just working with Richard.
Right, which is great, too, because...
It's perfect, because the rapport is there.
Yeah.
The schmooze is there. I'm not going to fumble.
Right, and he's going to catch you, too, if you go off.
I'm not going to fumble.
Right.
He's not going to fumble.
And he's aware of what's happened.
Of course. He knows everything that's going on, and I'm not going to fumble again.
Right.
We kicked the shit out of it, excuse my French, the next couple of days. And then we redid...
The Gleason thing?
The Gleason limo scene.
Right.
Okay. Well, now it's different.
Yeah.
Because now I'm aware of what the hell is going on.
Right.
So Gleason starts talking, and then the minute he shuts up, I just jumped in.
Right.
And then he's da-da-da, and I jump in.
And now everybody must be on set, must be like, oh, yeah,
listen,
boom, home, boom.
The first day we do it, we shoot for, 6 hours.
Right.
And get nothing.
Yeah.
The second time, we shoot for 3 hours, and it's all done.
Right.
It's all done. We go over the bridge a half a dozen times, whatever, and we're done.
Right.
Okay, moving along.
Which
great.
Is so wonderful when you hear
well,
that.
Well, of course,
Yeah.
And, Phil thought that it might have been Gleason because I was great with Pryor, whatever. So once I got past that second day, we redo everything. He called my dad. He said, he ain't going anywhere, dude. He's just fine. He's okay.
Right. Because it must have been stressful for a minute there. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, the ride back and then sitting in front of the guy, and he's basically like, hey, dude, you do this again, you're fired. Are you crazy?
Well, you're 14 or 13 years
13,
old.
Yeah. That's irrelevant. You're a professional.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
You know, I was on Broadway with John Carradine and Diane Wiest and John Glover. And
so you just have to be ready for that kind of conversation. Yeah. What's Ned Beatty like? He's such a talented dude. And
sweet man.
Yeah.
Very, very sweet man. I mean, I worked with him maybe a half a dozen days, 4 or 5 days, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, but he's a very, very nice man. He really was, you know. And I just saw him about a year ago. You know,
Is he doing okay?
He's hanging in there.
Yeah.
Not great by any means.
He's an older
but he's
man, but he's wonderful in it. And what's the older guy that's the
butler?
The butler, yeah. What's his
Wilford
name?
Wilford Hyde-White.
Yeah, Wilford.
Yeah,
that's it.
He's long,
yeah,
long
sure.
Past.
But I mean, you're interacting with these actors? You don't have any other kids like on Christmas Story? You
mm-hmm.
have. Tons of kids that you
yeah,
can
it was
play
me
and hang out with and stuff like that.
The kid that was my stand-in, his name was Davis Hotard, and He's a teacher. He went to LSU. He's a Louisiana boy.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So he went to school down there. And
that's
know,
cool.
He's still. I still talk to him. He's on my Facebook. And I've been down to Louisiana a couple times, and we've had dinner and hung out. You know.
Yeah. Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
But so you are growing up very quickly on set with the actors that are around you.
Listen, the stuff that I heard and saw, people would be in jail now.
Right.
There's not even a question. You know, Gleason with the smoking, and we were doing the party scene.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Okay,
yeah.
So we're doing the party scene, and Richard Pryor went in the hospital with exhaustion. It was the first big movie he did after, you know, he'd burned himself up.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in the hospital. So they're kind of having to extend the party scene. So there's a lot of downtime. They're shooting all kinds of stuff with extras and whatever. People coming up to Gleason the first day, and they're talking to him. He really don't, he ain't ready for his, you know. He doesn't want to go back to his, to the trailer because, you know, in a half an hour he's got to, you know, whatever, I'd rather just sit here. Okay. So he figured out what to do. He would call me over. Kid, come on over here. Scotty, come here. And he would pick me up and sit me on his lap.
Right.
Hey, you doing, kid? Scotty, what's going on? You doing all right? Yeah. No. What show did you watch last night? We talked about Honeymooners and all kinds of stuff all the time. Okay. And then he would put his hand up with the V shape with his fingers. And he would go, Mel. Mel was his assistant.
Yeah.
The minute he goes, Mel, and he opens up the fingers, that means put the cigarette in there. So Mel would put the cigarette. He would, and Mel would light the cigarette. And I'm 6 inches from his face, and he's just smoking away.
Right.
Chain smoking.
So different back then, man.
Chain
right?
smoking.
Yeah.
You go to jail now. You can't
oh,
get
you
out
can't
with kids.
Smoke
no.
like the hat in front can't. Of anybody,
of
really.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, next to some, oh, God.
Right, yeah.
So, and then Pryor, you know, again, he was fun, okay? And he's telling me about women and what extras he had, you know,
right, yeah.
indulged and, you know,
yeah.
production assistant this one and that. Da, da. And he's saying things to me and, you know.
And you're a kid, so
and
you just...
I'm going, that sounds good. And
right.
I didn't know what the hell he was talking about.
Right.
But I'm like, that sounds good. You know,
right.
that sounds nice, you know. So, I mean, I'm getting this incredible education, you know, of things I have absolutely no idea what the hell is going on, but I'm going along with it. And just had a blast.
What about Teresa? What's her?
Ganzel.
Teresa Ganzel. She's fucking so good in the movie.
Such
yeah.
a sweet lady. Oh no, we had fun. I mean, you know, again, she was, you know, just wonderful.
Right.
You know, we're still friends.
I was going to wonder. Yeah, she's still acting and
oh, she's
all that
the stuff in California.
I see her like
theater.
In a Three's Company thing too. I think like
oh,
she was
did a
super.
Lot of shows.
Yeah.
Well, she was actually she's the blonde bimbo on the Johnny Carson show for several years.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's her. Yeah,
she did that. She did a National Lampoon's thing. Whatever.
And there's so many adult themes like in.
Oh yeah.
As a kid, are you like do you get it or I mean are you like
50-50?
Yeah.
You know, maybe 60-40. I get. I don't get some of them. Whatever.
Right.
Actually, it was just a couple years ago. I was at a memorabilia show. And a guy that I knew grabs me and says, you got to see this. I think you got to get this. And a guy had costume designer drawings from all different projects, films, movies, whatever, and had the original drawing of Teresa with the white gown from the toy. You know, Moss Mabry was the guy that did the costume designer. So it was the original drawings of the dress and the whole thing or whatever. You know, and I'm
oh,
like,
that's so cool.
She's got to have it. Now, I know the guy that I bought it from overcharged me because
right.
I knew I had to have it. And, you
right.
know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it probably should have been $100 and it was almost double. It was like, whatever, dude.
Right.
So, but I bought it.
Yeah.
And I called Teresa and I said, hey, I said, let's grab a cup of coffee or Subway or something. I got something for you. I found you. Okay, you know. And we went and I had a big garbage bag, you know.
Right.
She's like, oh, my God. I said, listen, if somebody's supposed to have it, it's you.
It's so interesting to me because your first, this is a big break movie, right, obviously.
Oh, of course. Huge.
And in it. There's not many people that can say they worked with... They can say, and for the first movie, I worked with this iconic star.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody that was around you is an icon.
I mean, you got Ray Stark, producer. Worked Streisand.
Right.
You got Richard Donner. Now,
yeah.
again,
and
Superman.
It goes on to...
Superman, right. The Omen.
Yeah.
You know, and then you go before that, but then... And then you go on to all the Lethal Weapons and everything
sure.
else. And you got Gleason, and you got Pryor, and you got Ned Beatty, and you got Wilfred Hyde White. You know,
I mean, it has to be like
Tony Burton, who plays Duke in Rocky.
That's right,
Apollo Creed's manager.
Yeah,
I know what Rocky was, dude. I'm like, hey,
yeah.
this guy from Rocky. You know,
but it's not many people have that experience. You know, what's your thoughts on that? Like that.
Well, I mean, listen. I mean, there are kids that work with Spielberg.
Sure,
you
totally.
Know, their first movie is Hook, or their first movie is
E.T.
Whatever.
Yeah,
E.T., whatever.
Yeah.
You know. or you get, you know, Mrs. Doubtfire. You know, you get, you know, the Lawrence. I don't want to say Joey because it's not. I think it's his brother. It's his brother who's in it. But they're with Robin Williams and Sally Field. Sure. And, you know, so I mean, everybody kind of has who they work with. It's not only the people, but it's the quality of the people. It's who they are as people and how they treat you.
Sure.
You know, I've been very fortunate. I haven't really had, you know, hadn't had as a kid especially, anybody I worked with that I didn't enjoy working with.
That's cool. Yeah. You know,
nobody was just an absolute shit. Nobody.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I finished The Toy, and the second film I do is Kid Co. And, I mean, it was 4 months later.
Yeah.
And I was 14 physically. I was 25 mentally. So now I show up after working 4 months with Gleason and Pryor, and what do you want me to do? Just tell me what you need, and we'll make this all work, and whatever, you know. Yeah. And there's a monstrous story that happened on Kid Co with Kid Co, which is all good.
Mm-hmm.
Just too long to tell the story now. But it was great.
Yeah.
You know, Ron Maxwell was terrific. Frankie Blondes, David Niven Jr., the producers.
Was that challenging to go from that set of, like, Pryor and Gleason to the next film? Yeah. Like,
not just another movie.
Yeah, that's it. You're just like,
listen, I mean, you do a commercial and, you know, you got a bunch of kids on a thing or whatever. And then the next thing, you know, 2 days later, you're doing an HBO commercial with Sugar Ray Leonard.
Right.
Or then, you know, a week later, I'm doing Garanimals with, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I do Chapstick Sunblock 15 with Julius Irving.
Right.
Dr. J.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
So I mean, it's kind of going back and forth like this.
Came up in the era where so many people were so iconic and legendary. So there's a chance that you're, you know, I mean, not to dismiss this time, but everybody was still sort of around.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And alive and working.
There were a lot of people that were around, you know, early 80s.
Yeah. What's Richard Donner like?
Fun.
Yeah.
Easy.
Mm-hmm. Was he like?
Just do what you want. If I don't like it, I'll tell you.
Wow. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
I mean, he gave me a little bit of direction, but not a lot.
Right.
Because it was more just go. Because Pryor is kind of leading the way, and I'm just kind of following along. So it works that way, rather than trying to make me something I'm not.
Right. And in terms of the toys that you played with, just because the movie's The Toy, did you, like, I know you said the stunt double did most of, like, the car racing and all that kind of...
He did a lot of the motorcycle.
Did you get to play with any of that stuff?
Oh, no, they taught me how to ride a motorcycle.
Yeah, right.
You know, I was on a Yamaha 60.
Nice.
I rode in the go-karts and all that.
Right.
You know, the Camaro I rode in. Actually, I never drove Richard's, the racing car that he had. I never drove that. The white truck that he had, the one outside... I did that one, the white Camaro, I drove that. And, of course, the car in the house, I drove. Yeah, they let me play with all this stuff.
So if you catch them, we're almost there here. If you catch the movie on TV, what do you do? Do you watch it or do you?
Not really. You know, I can flip in on and off, you know. Just seen it so many times. It's not that I don't appreciate it, but when you've seen something 500 and 600 times that has you in it, there's a difference. It's like if I turn on the TV... Blazing Saddles, Young Frankenstein, History of the World, you know, Airplane.
Right.
Somewhere in Time.
Sure.
Flashdance. I'm going to watch it.
Right. There's movies like that.
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I'm going to watch it. I don't care how many times I've watched them. I love them. And just,
yeah, well, that's terrific. The toy for me. By the
Okay. But again, you're not looking at yourself.
No, definitely not.
So it's different when you're looking at yourself.
Sure.
You know, and you remember things about every scene.
I was talking with someone yesterday about that I was interviewing today, and I was like, I always know you, and I think most people know you as that kid, right?
Of course. I mean, more remember Christmas Story than The Toy.
Sure, but like anybody who's a
dad. Oh, I'm 13 to 14 years old. That's it. Doesn't matter that I'm over 50. That's irrelevant.
Right, but like.
I'm always going to be.
It's an interesting piece of time, like what a film does, right? Like it encapsulates a moment in your life.
Absolutely.
That is absolutely like there for you forever in a way that.
That's what doing movies is. I mean, you know, you can say John Travolta.
Sure.
We still see him and he still does movies or whatever. And at the same time, we're in our heads, we're going Grease, Saturday Night Fever.
That's it. Always. I'll always see him walking out with the pizza in the.
It's Tony Manero.
Yeah. Always.
You see Tony Manero.
Probably even more than Grease. Like, I mean, like, I'm a Grease fan for sure, but like I always kind of that iconic.
Yeah, they're both iconic. Yeah. The white suit, of course.
Yeah.
Um, So, you know, if you're lucky enough as an actor to have some kind of a role that people remember and it turns into that iconic thing, whatever age you are, whatever you look, that's what they're going
crazy,
to remember
right? Yeah.
for the rest of your life. It doesn't make any difference.
So, and then what is the first time, how is the first time that you see the movie? Who do you see it with? And what is that experience like?
We literally wrapped Kidco the day the toy opened in the theaters.
Okay.
So I'm in Tucson, Arizona, and we literally wrapped at like 4:30 in the afternoon. We're done. So the producer, or Frankie Blonde, says, "Hey, everybody meets in the lobby 7:15. We're going someplace." Okay. So there was 7, 8, whatever it was, Dodge cargo vans, and everybody jumps to the cargo vans. They didn't tell me what was going on.
You have no idea where you're
going. No idea. Yeah. You know? And they had bought 4 rows at the local movie theater, and we went for the 8 o'clock showing of the toy opening night.
Oh, that's so cool.
With the cast and crew from Kidco.
Yeah. I mean, and now you saw yourself on it. What did you, because, you know, you're in scenes, so you don't know what it's.
Oh, I know. You know the film. No, but you know what's happening. I know the film before I see it.
Right.
So it's like, you know, they got all the stuff with Richard first or whatever, and then the first time you see me is the car pulling up to what's supposed to be the store.
Right.
You know, the
toy store or whatever.
The toy store.
Yeah.
Which, of course, it wasn't, you know, whatever. But
right.
It's like, you know, I see myself and the limo pulls up and I see, you know, I see me in the thing. It's one thing to see, you know, on a television screen. I'd see myself on TV, on commercials.
Right.
But you're in a 27-inch box.
Right.
It's another thing when you're looking at this theater and your head's 15 feet tall. You know?
Right, yeah.
And it was just like, oh, boy. It was like, oh, wow.
This happened. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, and you kind of get weird feelings in your stomach. You kind of get this weird, like, holy shit. Jesus, you know. And then it just kind of goes, and it's like, all right, you know, people are laughing and people
Which
are having
good
a good
to
time.
Hear, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
And then, you know, afterwards, everybody was just like, you know, you're great, you're awesome, isn't it? Okay, good. You know,
it's a home run, man. Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm, again, this was Friday night, and I was home by Sunday, and I mean, the big thing, especially here on the East Coast, Channel 7, Joel Siegel.
Oh, right, yeah.
So we watched, think of movie reviews coming up, here we go. Joel Siegel more or less panned the film. He wasn't a big fan of the movie. But he specifically said, "The kid Scotch, he was great. How wonderful! He was great. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, now this is a big deal. Okay.
Sure.
And about 2 weeks later, my dad and I were at the Carnegie Deli, and Joel Siegel walked in.
Wow.
Went up. Yeah. But he went up. He had ordered a sandwich, and I guess everybody does what everybody does is you turn around. Who's in the deli? And he walked around, he looked around, he saw me, and he walked over. And he goes, you're Scott Schwartz, you were in the toy. And I said, yeah. He goes, you were terrific. And he shook my hand.
Oh, that's cool.
I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah,
you know, I was like, wow. You know?
He liked it. That's awesome. Yeah. It's funny, man. It's like, I think the movie's a classic, and I think most people feel like it's a classic movie, right, at this point in time.
Depends on your mindset.
But it's weird how all those guys, like, they pan everything. You know,
oh, there's a lot of people that pan everything.
You know, like, it's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. I mean,
you know, how do you pan Richard Pryor and Jackie
Ebert,
Gleason?
Ebert and Roger Ebert. Siskel and Ebert. You know, it was kind of 50-50, and they really didn't say anything about me. It was like, okay, fine, you know.
Right.
And you kind of, I mean, do you read the reviews? It's my first movie. You're going to look at everything,
of course,
you know.
Yeah.
People Magazine said something nice. It was like,
right.
Okay, great. You know, some other people said some nice thing. Nobody said I sucked.
Right.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
Did. Yeah, exactly.
Fine, you know.
So
he's a brat. He's supposed to be. Oh, that's
right.
My job.
Yeah, I was
going
to ask you that quickly. Were you a brat, or were you a brat in the movie? Like, when you look back on yourself back then, were you cast perfectly because you were a little bit bratty, maybe? Or did you?
It's more like the character.
The character was.
Because of him not getting the affection from the old man and not having that relationship, whatever. No, I was just a fun kid. I mean, I wasn't a troublemaker, nothing like that, whatever.
Right.
I was a lot more closer to Dickie Cessna, the kid I played in Kidco, personality-wise, the things that we did, the things that we liked. I was much closer to him as a character.
Than
the toy.
Than the toy, yeah. Well,
but it was being fun.
Yeah, and it wasn't.
It was just about being fun.
And you never had the desire to buy a human being, right?
I don't know. Can you still rent a black man for a week? I don't know.
I don't think so.
In this, you know, whatever. In this climate, you know.
No. I mean, that is an interesting thing about the movie that I don't even know if that movie gets made today.
Of course not. Right. No, you can't. Listen. The heartland of the country doesn't think like left and right.
Sure.
You know, or the coast.
Yeah.
They're different.
Yeah.
There are tons of people that I talk to who love the toy and they find it wonderful. And then there's a couple that, you know, man. And I'm going, really? That's what you got out of it?
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, I mean, I make jokes about it.
Yeah.
But I can. That's the whole point.
Yeah, right. You
know? I mean, listen, I was friends with Richard from the day I met him until the day he was gone.
Yeah.
You know, prior. You know. Being Jewish, white, love Richard Pryor. If somebody doesn't understand that I'm not racist, they're stupid.
Exactly.
They're just stupid.
Right, yeah.
You know, if you know nothing about me.
Well, obviously, you know, Richard Pryor, you know, you're a friend. So there is, you know,
But he became my muse, my mentor.
That's awesome.
He was my go-to guy. He gave me all of his phone numbers, you know, and said, you have a question, call me.
That's cool.
He's like, you ain't hit puberty yet. You hit puberty, you're going to want to know about women. You're going to want to know about drugs. You want to know about alcohol. You want to call me. I've done everything you could possibly imagine. Just call me and ask. Or just talk to me.
So the last time you saw Jackie Gleason, what was that like?
It was great. I was at his house. It was about a year before he passed.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and visited, you know. And, you know, he was just, you know, when I showed up. I mean, there's a whole story to how I got there and all this stuff because I didn't actually have his address and I had to go to the local police department and tell him who I was and all this stuff and had to talk to the lieutenant and the chief and whatever. And I, listen, this is why I want to go see him, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
They didn't want to give me his address. And then they gave me his address and I went and there's a security gate and
right.
I told the guy who I was. He calls the house, whatever, so they let me in. And so his wife said hello to me, gives me a big hug, you know.
Right.
Oh, Jackie's going to love this, you know.
Yeah, that's cool.
He was sitting in his patio, the little, you know, the netted in patios in Florida. And I came in, I said, hey, Pop, how you doing? He turns around, he's got the cigarette, you know, and the drink. Hey, what are you doing here? Oh, my God. And he gave me a hug and a kiss, and we chatted for 45 minutes.
That's cool, man.
Signed my poster, signed my laser disc. He was cool, you know. And then we had a really nice conversation, and, you know, and then I left, and a year later he was gone.
Yeah, sad. What a talent, though, right? The best.
They both were.
So where can people find you? Like, what are you up to now? You're at the Chiller Theaters and all that kind of the conventions.
Yeah, I go to Chiller Theater every April and October. I'm going toward the end of March at the St. Louis Convention Center where the Rams thing is, Christmas retailer buyer convention thing.
That's cool.
And I can't think of the rest of the name of it, so that they look it up, you know.
Yeah.
Christmas, St. Louis, March.
Google.
Yeah. You know, at the convention center, they'll find it. Oh, God. July, I'll be in Frisco, Texas at a AA game throwing out the first pitch.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
That's awesome. So is there a website? Do you have a web?
Like, nope.
No?
Dude, I'm just old school, and I don't.
Yeah, when I'm there,
not
you
a
find
big
me.
Social media guy. You know, I have a Facebook, which I didn't start it for fans.
Right.
You know, I wanted it for my family and friends and people I could, you know, whatever. And then it kind of became like, all right, well, I've got to kind of expand this for business purposes. You know,
sure.
Because people want, you know, hey, I want you to come and do a show or
sure,
I want you to
right.
do an appearance. And so, I mean, it helps bring income into the household. All right, fine. And then, you know, now it's like I probably have 600 waiting friends things, you know.
Right.
And it, you know, and it's nothing personal against anybody.
Of course, right?
You know, so it's like, I don't like tell somebody, hey, listen, you're just a Christmas story junkie, and that's not really what I want on my right. Facebook page.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. You got to be selective about who.
Yeah,
you know.
To some degree. You know?
Yes.
But it's like every Christmas I get.
Bombarded.
Every meme you can imagine. The picture of the dog with the licking of the pole. And I'm like, really?
It's funny. You know? Do you think people remember you more for the licking of the pole?
Yeah. Yeah, Christmas Story is iconic at this point. It's just, you know.
Right.
It's gone to that next level of
totally
all
is.
Of it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a 4-foot bronze statue of me in Hammond, Indiana, the home of Gene Shepard, the writer.
And everyone emulates that scene at some point.
Yeah.
They always do some version of that. Yeah.
No. I mean, I've got, or I should say I've got, there's less than 30 bronze statues of actors in the world. Now, I'm not counting, like, Hall of Fames.
No, that's different, yeah.
You know, or whatever. I'm saying in particular spots around the globe. So you've got Schwarzenegger's got one. Jackie Chan has one.
Lucille Ball.
Well, no, Stallone is the prop from the movie. So really, officially, that's not a bronze statue.
Interesting.
That's a prop from the film. Lucille Ball has hers. Henry Winkler has one in Milwaukee.
Oh, that makes sense, yeah.
Gleason has one at the Port Authority.
Yeah, right.
For the Honeymooners.
Right.
Richard Pryor has one in Peoria, Illinois. And they made one of me in Hammond, Indiana. Now, I mean, it's wild if you think about it.
That's
crazy, right?
Yeah.
So first of all, it's like, think of the biggest stars on the planet.
Right. Tom Hanks doesn't have one.
Tom Hanks doesn't have one. Humphrey Bogart doesn't have one.
Right. Robert De Niro doesn't have one.
Yeah. Al Pacino doesn't have one.
Yeah.
Julia Roberts doesn't. But I have one. It's very strange, you know. It's like, okay.
It's cool,
now,
man.
Again, realistically, and I mean, you break it all down.
Right.
The statue and $4 still gets me a croissant and a cup of coffee at Dunkin' Donuts.
Right, yeah.
So realistically, it's nothing more than it's something you left behind. It's a legacy
totally.
Thing that people can go and smile and have something to say, oh, I remember this, and it's great. It's just nice that it's, you know, kind of that somebody appreciated this so much that they had to do this.
That's pretty cool, man.
But of all movies, I mean, it's weird.
Yeah.
If you think about the incredible films that have been made.
Right.
You know, Keen Mutiny.
Right.
Casablanca.
The Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz. You ready? There's one film that the three stars of the movie have a bronze statue, and it's the toy.
That's wild.
Lisa
That's really...
Pryor and me.
Yeah.
It's the wildest thing, and of course, none of it's for that particular thing, but it's just...
It's
we
very
all
interesting.
We did something that
yeah.
people made statues. It's wild. Yeah.
What is maybe the most interesting Jackie story that he tells you from maybe about the Honeymooners or some...
Okay, this is a great story. So, one day, and I don't remember, it was, you know, maybe a month and a half, 2 months, and something like that, whatever it was. Somebody said something about drinking. It was just kind of brought up, you know,
right?
Whatever. And Gleason is drinking iced tea all day. He had just had his liver pumped before the film because he was an alcoholic. That's
right.
What he did.
So he's not drinking anymore.
Not drinking anymore. So somebody thought he had an alcoholic drink, and I'm sitting on his lap.
Right.
And he goes, no, I'm not drinking right now. I'm not drinking. And I'm sitting there, and he looks at me. He goes, I'm going to tell you what drinking does. So here we go. Now, I don't know if you know this. He hated to fly. So he's doing the Jackie Gleason show on the Honeymooners in New York.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not all the time, but they were up in New York most of the time. And then later it went to Miami. But he lived in Miami. They would limo service him.
From
he sat in the back of a limo from Miami to New York.
Wow.
Okay. So he tells me this story that he had really been abusing this driver, you know, on this one particular trip up to New York. Got to D.C. He said, I was so drunk and ill. He goes, I was vomiting in the car. I'm cursing the driver out. He got so pissed, he pulled off to the side of the road on 95 and said, F you, Mr. Gleason, drive yourself the rest of the way. I quit.
Wow.
And so this is what Gleason tells me. He says, and it took me, you know, an hour to get my stuff together, and I got in the car and drove up to the first stop, and then I got a cup of coffee.
Sobered himself up,
and he drives the rest of the way to New York. Okay. So I tell my father what Gleason says to me. He's like, yeah, drinking's no good, but that's probably a bullshit story. He just doesn't want you to drink. I said, okay, fine. Go 6 years later. I'm in Bethesda or in the D.C. area, and I'm doing an autograph signing at a video store. Guy walks in. A little bit older than me, a little bit old. You know, he was in his, 50s, 60s, whatever.
Right.
He comes in. Oh, it's nice to meet you. I saw the movie. I said, oh, thank you. And he said, well, we kind of have a mutual friend. Are you really? Yeah, Mr. Gleason. I was a limo driver. And he starts telling me the story.
Wow.
So he's telling me the story, and I'm just looking at him. And I know the story.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, Gleason was cursing at me and he's drunk and he's puking all over the place. And I had enough of his bullshit. And I said,
you know
what?
True story. Yeah.
I said, F you, Mr. Gleason. You could drive yourself. I quit. He goes, I got out of the limo. He goes, I didn't have a bag. I didn't have any other clothes. I had nothing. He goes, I walked. Thank God I had my wallet. I had some money with me.
Wow.
And a friend of a friend lived in the area.
Uh-huh.
And I went to his house. He goes, I never left. He goes, I called my friends back home, send me my clothes, send me my stuff. He goes, I never left. I've been here ever since then.
Oh, that's crazy.
Like, this is like 30 years later. And
so it was a true story.
And it was a true story.
Right, confirmed by the driver.
How's the driver going to know that I know the story?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. Never know that you know that Jackie Gleason ever told you that story.
Exactly. So when he tells me a story, I'm looking, I'm like, holy shit, this actually happened.
Right. Yeah, this is a real thing. Yeah.
You know, but I mean, Gleason told me about, you know, playing shooting pool with, you know, all the hustlers in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
Before, you know.
What about, like, did you get to watch, because you said you watched The Honeymooners every night when you were on
nights a week, absolutely.
Did you get to watch him with him? Did you watch any Honeymooners episodes with Gleason or no?
No.
But did you?
No, but his makeup artist would always go to his trailer to do his makeup.
Okay.
That was the norm, okay? After about 2 weeks, a couple times a week, he would come into the makeup trailer. Which, you know.
Right.
And even Richard got done in the makeup trailer. Now, he could have gotten done in his own show, but he was like, hey, get to hang out for a few more minutes and we get to laugh and whatever. Okay. Gleason, once or twice a week, would come to the regular makeup trailer.
Just to hang out with you, probably, yeah?
Oh, no, he would go, so what was on last night?
Oh.
And I would go into whatever episode of The Honeymooners was on. You
right.
know?
And would he share, like, oh, I remember that, or da-da-da-da.
Oh, he would give me little anecdotes and stuff like that. But, I mean, you know. My favorite was dun 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 dun. Who's the composer? Ed Norton.
Right.
The best.
Yeah, that was the best moment. Yeah.
One of the best moments. I mean, of course, you had, you know, Hello Ball, Address the Ball, Hello Ball, and you had all the stuff, Bang Zoom and all that. But it was just that one thing with, you know, Art Carney playing the piano, and every song he's doing, he's got to go dun 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 dun. And it's the first song on the game show. Who did that? Ed Norton?
That's awesome, man. Cool, man. I'm good, man. Thank you so much for this time and the interview. It was awesome, dude. Yeah.
Hey, listen, I got to tell you, I mean, it's fun to get to talk about the toy much more at this point than Christmas.
Sure.
Because that's like 99% of what I talk about is, you know,
yeah.
Oh, how did you do it? And I'm like, really? It's on the DVD. Are you really? Yeah, come on, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, talking about Gleason and Pryor and Teresa and Ned and Dick Donner and, you know.
They're all so good. It was such a great, it was well cast too, you know, and you just, what's interesting about it in terms of you being an actor or whatever, it's like, you definitely, at a young age, were able to, like, roll with heavyweights in a room. Like, just, and fit in, and from what you're saying, just be, like, a part of it, you know? Well, anyway, man, thank you so much for doing this. I really, really appreciate it, dude. It was an awesome interview. Appreciate it, man. Awesome. Thank you.
You got it, big guy.
Awesome.
Do you want more updates on the Pop-Up Podcast? Check out our website, popuppodcast.com, for all the latest episodes, upcoming guests, merchandise, and more. Or if you're more of the social type, check us out at the Pop-Up Podcast on Facebook, the Pop_Up Podcast on Instagram. Now back to the show.
Such an awesome episode, such an interesting conversation. We spoke for probably close to 2 hours, and I just couldn't get enough of it. There will be a bonus Scott Schwartz episode down the line. But wow, what about those anecdotes about Jackie Gleason? I mean, I literally can see those things coming through and how as they're happening. But you know what's so funny is being a kid and growing up in Jersey, you know, Jackie Gleason and The Honeymooners was such a big thing for me. And I think for a lot of us that were over here. And so it was for Scott as well. So it's interesting for him to get the opportunity to ask him about episodes and whatnot. And he told us, you know, in that interview that Jackie would ask him what episode was on last night. So pretty cool. Scott Schwartz is just such a cool fucking dude too. Awesome in person. And he has a really interesting like life story and trajectory after these movies. And Kidco, we talked a little bit about as well, which I haven't, I don't remember seeing. So I'm going to go back and dig into that one. But just love the movie, The Toy. Richard Pryor story is so awesome. And now next week, I'm going to tell you who it is because it's coming up and it's agreed upon. And I know it's coming. Growing up, my sister Michelle and I were obsessed with the movie Clue. And I know there's a lot of us out there. The comedic lines and the dialogue in that movie is something that we still quote. So next week, Jonathan Lynn, the director of Clue, is going to sit down with me in person, and we're going to talk all things Clue, from the writing, because he wrote this thing too. So from the writing to the directing, to the actors. We're going deep in this deep dive. So super excited for next week. Jonathan Lynn of Clue, get yourself ready and pick a beer. I'll tell you what. First thing, a first-time contest. I've never done a contest. It's not a contest. I want everybody on Facebook to follow the Pop-Up Podcast. Just by going to the Pop-Up Podcast on Facebook, you'll see my ugly face on the, I think the handsome face, but whatever, depending on who's listening to this. You can find it on Facebook, and that's the profile picture. So if you tell me whatever vote, whatever beer gets the most vote, I will absolutely drink next week. So I'm looking to try something outrageous. So you pick the beer for me to sit down with Jonathan Lynn. Okay, thanks so much for listening. I'm going to catch you guys next week.
Today's episode of the Pop-Up Podcast was brought to you by Sunspot Films. Thanks for listening. For updates, check out popuppodcast.com.